You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires.
As they move headlong into the final furlong, and Street Sense has roared from 19th position to first in the Derby. Hard Fun tries to hold for second, and then find the back of Sense Field at any given Saturday. And here is Street Sense, a stretch running sensation to win the Derby by two.
Super Saver Calvin Burrell, one furlong from the Derby here. Noble's Crown is in second. Petty O'Connell is now third. Make Music for me. Big Mike Shot now fourth on the outside. And they're coming down to the finish. And it is Super Saver. A late run from Icebox. But it's Super Saver and Calvin Burrell. The unflappable Calvin Burrell. Riding that rail to victory once again in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, as you'd expect, the legendary Tom Durkin with a couple of sensational Derby calls. 44 horses have used the Tampa Bay Derby as a stepping stone to a start in the Run for the Roses, but only Street Sense and Super Saver have been successful on the first Saturday in May. How many Kentucky Derby starters should we expect from this year's Tampa Bay Derby field? And is Forte's victory in the Fountain of Youth enough to prove it's him and everybody else in this year's three-year-old crop? Plus, Dale and Tim share their toughest beats and their greatest gambling stories. All of that's still ahead on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And it's all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. And it all starts just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Well, guys, we've been waiting for a three-year-old to step up and assert themselves as the one to beat on the first Saturday in May. Was Forte's win in the Fountain of Youth enough to convince you that it is Forte and everyone else? Dale, you were there. What do you think?
If he beats Cyclone Mischief, he's a really good horse. And he's the leader of the pack right now. Any way you look at it, there's no way around it. He ran a beautiful race off a lightly, according to the works, he was lightly worked coming in. And looks like there's room for improvement. I was super impressed.
If he does beat Cyclone Mischief, he has to be at the top of the class. Because we all know we're all big fans of Cyclone Mischief on this show.
All right.
And but Forte, I mean, just you looked at him in the paddock before the race. I mean, he just looked like he was going to toy with this field, just the way he was prancing and up on his toes. And you know, he had a little bit of trouble in that race. He got behind a wall of horses on the backstretch, but there was never any doubt once he got in the clear, and he just powered past that field. Right now, without question, he's the top three-year-old, but still there's a long, long way to go. Well, not long, long, but a long way to go until the first Saturday in May. And as of today, March 11th, he's definitely the one to beat, but there's other horses that I'm still looking forward to seeing what they do moving forward.
Yeah, he's certainly the leader in the clubhouse. There's no doubt about it. And Dale, you know that when a horse comes back from 2 to 3, especially a champion like Forte, there's always some anxious moments as to whether he's going to be as good as advertised, and he certainly was. Your horse, Cyclone Mischief, ran huge to be third, but Forte was in another stratosphere last weekend.
Hats off to Todd. He did a great job bringing him back. And you're right. There's a lot of horses don't make that turn from 2 to 3. You look at the two top fillies last year. Both them scrapped out in their first race back. It's a difficult thing because they mature early, and it's hard to keep a horse going the right way for that long, and the rest of the class usually catches up. But Forte, he's on a pedestal right now. He's all by himself.
Well, Forte may have stolen the show last Saturday, but there were three other Derby points races run last week. You had Raise Kane, who won the Gotham. You had Practical Move, who took the San Felipe, and Congruent, who upset the John Battaglia Memorial at Turfway. Tim, I'll come to you first. Which of those horses impressed you the most?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go first by the horses I'd eliminate. Raise Kane was 23-1.
Mm-hmm.
He won by open lengths on a muddy track, so I'm not sold on him. Congruent, who was ridden by Sonny Leone, who we remember him from Rich Strike last year. That horse was 16-1. Race what Aesthetics at the Battaglia, won by 3.5 lengths. So I throw him out. So by process of elimination, I'm saying Practical Move was the one that impressed me the most for Tim Yakteen, who was saddling also horses that were in the Bob Baffert barn, but this horse is his, and he won by 2.5 lengths, and he was 4-1, and he was he got 100 buyer speed figure from that race. And that's just one of three-year-olds this year that have gotten to that plateau. Forte had a 98. So I would say Practical Move was the most impressive race of last weekend.
Yeah, I have to agree. Practical Move's race was a nice race. He was a good two-year-old down here last year. He brought 200-something thousand. He's a beautiful horse. And then if you look at the race, I mean, 7 of the 9 are coming off of wins. The other two were second and third. It was a better-than-average race at Santa Anita. Usually at Santa Anita, if you're not a Bob Baffert horse, it's anticlimactic. But I thought he ran a beautiful race, and I think Tim's best horse is going to be his own.
Yeah, very well could be.
Well, remember,
that would be ironic considering all the Baffert horses.
Oh, he did get Arabian Knight, your number one pick.
That's right.
Yeah, well, time will tell if indeed Practical Move turns out to be the best of the bunch. But no doubt about it, Forte is the leader in that division as we sit here on March 11th. Guys, let me ask you this question. You had the Tampa Bay Derby today, which is going to offer 50 points to the winner. 12-horse field, how many Kentucky Derby starters can we realistically expect to see come out of that race? Dale?
You can come up with a couple out there. The first and second horses will get enough points most likely, or close to it, depending on how things shake out. Now, how many Derby winners are coming out of there? I say zero. But a couple of starters will show up.
You know, you look at this race historically, which I did, the most horses that ever came out of this race that went to the Derby was 4, and that was in 2009. There's been a handful of other times that 3 horses exited this race and went to the Derby. You know, if you finish 1, 2, 3, you're probably going to think about it for sure, because you're going to have points, 50 for the winner, 20 for second, 15 for third. It will get you in the, you know, the third place, or it'll get you into the ballpark of, you know, maybe qualifying for the Derby. But, you know, Todd is, you know, he's going for his 6th Tampa Bay Derby this week, today. And, he's got the top 2 choices in Tappet Trice and She's Sturkin. You would think if he finishes in the top 3 with those 2, that they might move on, and then, you know, he could have a loaded gun for the Kentucky Derby if these horses run like they're expected to, because they're the top 2 choices. But I would say no more than 3 would come out of this race, which has a field of 12. And would be in the starting gate at Churchill.
Dale, we know that Timmy researches like nobody else. He's fantastic when he gets ready for this show and prepares. Tim, I'm going to hit you up with let's see exactly how much research you did. You said 2009 was the year that the Tampa Bay Derby produced 4 Kentucky Derby starters, the most it's ever produced. Who won the Tampa Bay Derby in 2009?
Musket Man.
Boom.
You're not going to trip him up. If you've given him the script, he's read it, he's researched it, he's done it all.
Well, you know, that's what I do.
Well, I'm sure our good friend Nick Zito would say the same. And Nick is with us now, as he is every week here on the show, with this week's edition of Right or Wrong.
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
Guys, I did it a little differently this week. This afternoon, we remember 2 of the great distaffers our sport has ever seen, with the Azari Stakes at Oaklawn and Beholder Mile at Santa Anita. I have selected 5 sets of pairings, and I can't wait to find out if you guys think that I am right or wrong in my opinions of which horse would emerge victorious out of these pairings. So here you go. Going to kick it off with Personal Ensign versus Zenyatta, and I'm going to take the courageous, undefeated Personal Ensign in this one. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right?
Dale, what say you?
100% right. She was something special. And one of the highlights of my friendships of people in this game is taking Randy Romero back to the airport after the races one day, and he's telling me about the pressure he felt to retire undefeated with Personal Ensign when they loaded in the gate for the 1988 Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, and he nailed the Philly Derby winner, winning colors on the wire at the last jump. He said when they were loading in the gate, he just wanted to hide somewhere. And he got up on the last jump in the and what is undoubtedly, in my opinion, the greatest Breeders' Cup day in history.
Well, you know, I love Personal Ensign. I mean, that Breeders' Cup distaff, when she was behind by four lengths or so with the eighth of a mile to go and still showed her courage to win that. But I'm going to say wrong. I'm going to go with Zenyatta only because this is a filly that won 19 of 20. She won the Breeders' Cup Classic, beating the males in 2009, and ironically didn't even get Horse of the Year. That went to another filly I think we're going to talk about later. But and Personal Ensign beat Boys in the Whitney, but she only beat two of them. So I'm going to say Zenyatta only by the barest of margins on this one. Because, you know, she captured the imagination of the sport and had such a phenomenal career, taking away nothing from Personal Ensign. But Zenyatta, I think, wins by a lip on this one.
Okay.
Yeah, one little caveat on my decision is I sit every day next to Shug McGahee and talk about stuff watching our horses train. And I got to sit with him tomorrow.
Good choice then, Dale. Personal Ensign for Dale, Zenyatta for Tim. Matchup number two, Winning Colors versus Rachel Alexandra. And I've got Rachel all day long in this matchup. Am I right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Timmy?
I'm going to say right on this one, Mike. You know, Rachel was, when she was at the top of her game, there was no one better. She beat Boys three times in her three-year-old season, winning the Preakness, the Haskell, and then beating Olders in the Woodward at Saratoga, and which was, you know, you can still hear Tom Durkin's call. The rafters of the spa were shaking when she won that day. I mean, Winning Colors won one of only three fillies to win the Kentucky Derby, and that stands for something. But, you know, Rachel Alexandra with 13 wins and 19 starts, 2009 Horse of the Year, when it was such a great debate who should get it, her or Zenyatta, and she did get it. But I think Rachel Alexandra wins this one fairly comfortably.
I must agree. Rachel was something special. I know they're both such special fillies. I mean, you're splitting hairs when you're talking about any of these fillies that you've got in this competition. But Rachel, I think she should have been the fourth Kentucky Derby winner. They should have run her in the Derby that year. Her fourth filly Kentucky Derby winner. And do y'all realize she was owned and half owned by the owner of Shackleford, Mike Lauffer, and his team? And that, so I had a little extra incentive to cheer for.
All right, so Rachel gets the nod from both Dale and Tim over Winning Colors. How about Lady Secret versus Monomoy Girl? And I'm going to take the Iron Lady, Lady Secret. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right?
Dale?
I'm with you all the way on this one. Lady Secret was in the sweet spot of my being a big fan more than a participant in a lot of this game. And Wayne Lucas's filly was something special. I mean, of course, a couple of people jumped off the bridge the last time she ran. But up till then, she was unbeatable.
45 starts? Who makes 45 starts in a career anymore? Yeah, the Iron Lady for sure. 25 wins. She, the daughter of Secretariat, Horse of the Year in 86. That year, 8 of her 10 wins were grade ones. She was indeed one of the most talented fillies we've ever seen. And that's not to take anything away from Monomoy Girl, who won 14 of 17 in her career. And remember, in her career, she missed a year because of a bout of colic, and then she had a pulled muscle. And then she came back at 5 and 6 and really was pretty well. She won the distaff twice after coming back. So, but Lady Secret, I think, just did too much, but did much more than Monomoy Girl. I mean, Monomoy Girl only had 17 starts. Lady Secret indeed wasn't the Iron Lady. She's on a pedestal.
All right. I don't think this next one's quite as easy, but we'll find out. In honor of the two stakes races being run today, Azari versus Beholder. And for me, I'm going to take Queen Bee, Beholder, all day long. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, right or wrong. Okay.
Timmy?
Well, I think you're right on this one, Mike. I'm with you on this. Beholder I mean, she won the four different Eclipse Awards during her career. And, you know, it always was one of the things that I wish would have happened when she was scratched before the 2015 Breeders' Cup Classic at Keeneland, because she bled during a work. And it would have been interesting to see what would have happened in that race with Farrell and her. And she's one of two horses in history to win three Breeders' Cup races. I mean, those are some really juicy pieces of a resume. And Azari, you know, Horse of the Year in 2002, won 17 of 24 starts. But I don't think she did as much as Beholder did. Beholder's one of the all-time greats.
One of the greatest races of all time, the Distaff at Santa Anita. And I have to agree with you. Beholder's one of the all-time greats. And I think in anything away from Missouri, she was one of them, too. She was in that Dallas Breeders' Cup Classic when I ran Rose of May. I think one of the best classics ever assembled. And just a great race mare. But you're right. I'm going Beholder.
All right, so you both agree with me. I'm a little surprised. I didn't think that would be as easy to figure out, but Beholder was pretty brilliant. So was Azari, but I'll take Beholder. All right, how about the last one? Ruffian versus any of the legends that we just mentioned in this segment. If they're all in the same race, my money is going on Ruffian. Am I right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
Dale, what do you think? Right or wrong?
You know, I'm only going on hearsay, because I was a little young. But Jacinto Vasquez, another good friend, and Leroy Jolly, another good friend, that trained Clueless Pleasure in the match race. Jacinto told me he never got to the last gear on this filly. He said she was the greatest thing he ever set aboard. And he rode a lot of good horses. And I'm going to tell you a little sidebar. So I'm going Ruffian over everyone. And a sidebar, though, is I have great footage on my phone of me and Leroy sitting in my office at Saratoga, and there happened to be a social media guy there doing some filming of when Keen Ice won the Travers. And Leroy had two stalls in my barn. He's one of my good friends. We're sitting in my office, and we start talking about it. And I told the guy, roll the camera, and ended up sitting there and interviewed Leroy about the match race and how it came about and how different it was supposed to be compared to what it ended up. One of these days, we'll get it taken care of. We'll get it out there where people can see it.
That would be amazing. Timmy, what do you think?
Well, I'm sticking with Ruffian on this, too. I mean, I never saw her race just live, obviously. I mean, I was in high school. But I think that, you know, 10 wins and 11 starts, every stakes race she was in, she set a stakes record, led at every call. She's probably the best filly that ever lived. And I think that it would be an injustice to take anyone over Ruffian. She was that good.
Yeah, and there were several other top distaffers that could have made this matchup segment here today, but I wanted to kind of try to set some things where they were somewhat similar but a little bit different in some ways, some older horses versus some more modern horses, and you guys knocked it out of the park. So Ruffian versus any of the legends, you're both taking Ruffian, and I would agree, all three of us on the Ruffian train there. She was spectacular. All right, that is Right or Wrong. We're going to do that segment all over again.
That was good stuff. I like that segment.
Thanks, Dale. I'm glad you enjoyed it. We'll do something similar as we get down the road to the Kentucky Derby. Maybe we'll compare past Derby winners or something as we get close to that first Saturday in May. All right, two more topics to get to before we wrap it up. On Tuesday, NYRA announced the 2023 Saratoga Stakes schedule, which is going to offer 71 stakes worth $20.8 million. But it does cut nearly $2 million in purse money, and it eliminates six ungraded stakes events from this year's schedule. Timmy, you're the Saratoga guy. Do you like these moves?
Well, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, it's, you know, you look at the people that go to Saratoga. I mean, if you ran donkeys at Saratoga, they'd come out and bet it. I mean, I don't think the general public doesn't care. If horsemen, I'm sure, care. But, you know, some of the stakes races that were, you know, cut, like the Saratoga Derby went from $1 million to $600,000, which I never thought it should have been a $1 million race anyway. Saratoga Oaks, $700,000 to $400,000. I don't think it's going to be that big a deal. The best thing I thought that came out of the Saratoga Stakes schedule being announced was that they finally named a race for Harvey Pack, and that longtime racetrack character who had made a career out of, you know, doing the OTB show, and just a wonderful character. And I think it was long overdue that they finally got a race in his name. So I think that's the best thing for me that came out of this.
I don't think you'll see any major differences. The average fan won't notice a thing about the changes. But the great thing is to have Harvey Pack and the race horse be with you, a race named after you. Should have happened a long time ago, way overdue.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree. I can tell you, I haven't read many books over the years, but one book that I did read that was signed by the great Harvey Pack was his book that he wrote, which it was fantastic. So many great stories in there, and I agree with you guys. I'm so glad that they made that move and named a race in Harvey's honor. All right, one final topic before we have to wrap things up. We have a few minutes left in the show. The 24th NTRA National Handicapping Championship is taking place in Vegas this weekend, so I thought it was the perfect time to share a couple of stories about our toughest gambling beats and our greatest scores. So if I were to ask you guys to share some of those, what is your most gut-wrenching beat that you can recall, and what is probably the most memorable score that you have ever had? Timmy, you want it first?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a pair of Travers Stakes in 2008, I believe. Colonel John beat Mambo in Seattle, who I loved the whole summer by a nose. And I still think that Mambo in Seattle won the race, because I remember I was going on a TV interview as soon as the race was over, and I was starting to talk about this is before the race was even made official, and I was going on about how Mambo in Seattle just won the Travers, and we had to cut it after the race made official and do it all over again. But, that was a race that really put a dent in my wallet. And then a couple years later, our buddy Nick Zito, who I liked his horse a lot, Fly Down, in the Travers, got beat a nose by a Fleet Express and from Jimmy Durkins. And St. Nick, to this day, will tell you that he thinks he won that race, and I kind of agree with him, because that nose was very, very slim, and those two were, I'm sure there's plenty more, but those two are the ones that stick out to me. And as far as the biggest score, there was a horse named, I don't know if you remember, this was nondescript, a horse named Scheme, who for Jimmy Bond, who was racing on the grass for the first time at Gulfstream a couple of years ago. And Jimmy loved the horse and went off at 25-1 and won like a champ. So that's one of my best scores I've ever had. I think it was Paco Lopez. I think it was Paco Lopez was just found a hole, went through it, and the horse won for fun. And I was a hero to a few people that I also enlightened on that bit of information that I got.
Those are great stories. Dale, how about for you?
Well, for me, I'm not a gambler, believe it or not. I haven't bet on a horse in 20 years. But, if I could write a book about my father's stories on gambling and why he was in the game and what he was a part of, including Blair Wood, his real name, that ran in the name Briarwood in the 1986-88 Kentucky Derby Day card and beat Bill Shoemaker a nose on the wire and paid $77, which he had to do a two-year suspension over because the horse ran in the wrong name. And I could write a whole book about that, or I could write a book about a lot of other gambling stories from Judgment Call at Beulah Park that people will remember. But I think one of the funniest things is I had some gambling owners, and I was trying to keep his first-time starter under wraps when I went to Saratoga for the first time in my life at 27 years old. And I think I got, nobody knows this horse can run. And I've been going to races for about a week, and I'm trying to be a big shot. I'm tipping the valet guy good and taking care of the gatekeepers. And I pull into the parking lot the day that middleman's running. This guy has no idea who I am. He takes my car and he says, "Come here, bud. You've been taking care of me. I'm going to take care of you today. Let me give you this horse to bet on." And it was middleman, my horse. half what I expected. That's Today's been a good show. That's another good question, but we should talk more about gambling stories. I could tell you the $150,000 pick six I did bet with Frank Jones at Saratoga. We were hitting for $150,000, and we got disqualified in this race and got back $10,000, which at the time was still good, but it wasn't quite what I wanted when I thought I was getting $150,000 back. But there's too many of those stories to talk about on even an hour show. So we'll have to do that again.
Yeah, I can chime in on this topic too. My best score of all time came at Saratoga when I hit a pick four that paid over $4,000 for 50 cents. I had it for a dollar, so I got it twice, get over $8,000. But I had to survive an inquiry that lasted about 15 minutes because the horse I had in the last leg where I hit the all button in that race was 20-something to 1. The horse that was second in the inquiry was the favorite in the race. So if indeed the results were not upheld, I probably would have lost money on my bet instead of winning $8,000. But they did not disqualify the long shot. He held up as the winner. So that was probably my greatest score. And I'll tell you, one of my greatest disappointments, which still sticks to me to this day, August 5th, 2000, race 5 at Saratoga. I was playing in a handicapping contest out at Keeneland that day, and I was kind of in the mix. I wasn't close to the lead, but I was in the mix. I bet a horse that was 15 to 1 in that race by the name of Apple Turnover Mike, and he was making a huge move on the turn, going to blow by the entire field. He's going to win for fun. A horse clips heels in front of him. Apple Turnover Mike has to hurdle that fallen rival. He does. The jockey stays on, and he loses about 5 lengths. He comes flying again through the stretch because he had so much. He was so full of run, and he gets beat a half a length for the whole thing. But I got 0 points for it in my bankroll. If he wins, I probably win the whole thing. I probably go to Vegas with a pocket full of money. But it was not meant to be. That was probably one of the more difficult beats for me to get over. Apple Turnover Mike, August 5th. Race 5 at Saratoga.
Hey, Mike, if that horse would have won, you might have been a big high roller in Las Vegas, and we wouldn't be on the show.
Yeah, you might have got out there celebrating, got drunk, and run over by a car. You're probably better off.
Yeah, there's two ways to look at everything.
Exactly. I'll tell you a quick story, though, about gambling, too. So I just start dating Tammy, and I'm nothing but a groom for my father, and she's, in my mind, a famous jockey, riding winners, and we're just start going out, and she's riding a horse for her mother and her father, Big Courage. And she tells me, can't get beat. So I bet my case bankroll 200 at the time. Boom. And she takes off down the backside, passes Pat Day, and of course, in Pat Day fashion, he comes back and nails her on the wire, lose my money. And so I took her to McDonald's that night. Do you think I moved too early on Big Courage today? I said, no, baby, you didn't move too early. What are you talking about? It's Pat Day, da-da-da. We lost some money, no big deal. So fast forward 10 years. We're in a big argument one day, and she's winning, and I got to go for the gut. And I said, by the way, you did move too early on Big Courage 10 years ago.
You just kept that one in reserve until you needed it, Dale.
I held it back. I needed it, but it didn't work out the way I expected. She still won the argument.
I'll bet it didn't.
Yeah, I'm sure that went over really well.
All right.
All right. Time to wrap it up. You'll get to your final point momentarily, but I want to give an update on the showdown that Tim and Dale are competing in. They're squaring off all the way through the Belmont Stakes with a stable that they have drafted. And after week two of the showdown last week, Dale and Tim are both on the board. Dale, you jumped out to the early lead. You're ahead 12-10, thanks to Charges runner-up effort in the Gulfstream Park Mile and Cyclone Mischief and that third-place finish in the Fountain of Youth. Tim, you had Forte, the winner of the Fountain of Youth, but it only got you the 10 points for the win. So Dale takes an early lead in the showdown.
Well, I don't think anybody, I'm not going to mention any names, but a lot of people on the racetrack now are calling him Two Down Tim.
Two Down?
Two Down Tim.
What does that mean?
You're two down.
You're two down.
Oh, two down. Oh, man. It's. I have no doubt I'm going to win this.
All right. No horses from either stable competing this weekend. So the score will remain 12-10 after this week. But your horses will be in action, no doubt, many times between now and the Belmont Stakes. And folks can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and they can see your entire stable. They can keep score updates there. It's all posted on our homepage. So head over, check out their teams, and chime in. Let us know who you think is going to win the showdown when we get to the Belmont Stakes in early June. All right, guys, one final segment. It is time for you to make your parting shot, your final point of the week. Timmy, why don't you take it first?
I'm going to propose something for our competition. I'm going to propose there's 1 week, and Mike, you being the judge, you tell us when it is, that we can drop one horse and pick another one.
Okay.
Take
we can do that.
Okay. That sounds like weakness to me, but I don't care.
I think he's running
scared. I'm doing
scared.
It to help
you. What's that?
I'm doing it to help you.
Don't worry about me, Hoss. Bring them on. But if you want to do it that way, that's fine. Weakness is a good thing for me. Seeing weakness in the competition.
I just think, no, it would be something that would spice it up. Look.
Dale, all give right, me your I'm parting shot.
My parting shot is, last Wednesday was International Women's Day, and I want to tip my hat to the women of racing. We got Kathleen O'Connor only two away from passing Kim Hammond as the all-time leading female trainer. And they're both ahead of me in number of wins. But I want to say, tip my hat to all the ladies of racing. It's a man-dominated game. They have to work harder. They have to prove themselves more. And there's no two better representatives to the trainer industry than Kim Hammond and Kathleen O'Connell. I tip my hat to both. They've won over 2,000 races apiece.
Yep, very well said. And I would echo those sentiments, too. Going to be fantastic to see Kathleen get the record, and two really incredible women in our sport right there. Dale, Tim, appreciate it, guys. We'll do it all over again next week. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, fellas.
Thanks,
good talking.
All right. If you have a topic you want to hear Dale and Tim debate, you know what to do. Email it to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I'll get it worked in for you in the weeks ahead. I Ask, They Answer is presented every week by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. I'll be back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.